Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Redmen TV. I'm Steve Hoare and welcome to the Redmen Weekly Show, the show where we bring you the best clips from our Redmen Plus content from the previous week. All these shows are available in full over at redmenplus.com. You get them in video and in podcast form. So yeah, if you like what you hear in the next half an hour or so, do consider going over to redmenplus.com, signing up today and getting all these shows in full, either in your ears or in your eyes, or indeed both. Right, let's start off then with the Biased Football Podcast, a show that allows us to look around the league and around Europe and chat about all the different teams, of course. Chat about Arsenal's win, the title race, the relegation battle, and loads more this weekend. It was Paul, it was Chris, it was Chloe, and it was Dan. Yeah, check out the Biased Football Podcast.
You know what, actually, just reminded me something I wanted to share with you. It's totally unscripted, just something I've not spoken to anyone about. So I did sat the social with Steve McInerney at the weekend, and I've not seen him in a while. And look, regular contributor from a City perspective to the show, really nice guy, just supports a football club that obviously cheats. He's been very bullish over the years, and people have seen him on the overlap.
Why are football fans accountants?
Yes. So he pulled that one out on the show again this week, which is his standard go-to fare.
Yeah.
But he did ask me this question in the green room. Apropos of nothing, he just said, you know, if City got relegated down to the bottom division and then had to come back up again, but with all the same owners, would you consider that time saved if they then did it from the bottom and came all the way back up again, even if they remain, you know, with a financial advantage, albeit they're going to have to do it cleaner if they've been caught. He said respect, and I don't think anyone's going to, if I put it in those black and white terms, I think the answer's going to be no. But how would it change your feelings if Man City got done, hugely done, and got sent down to the bottom of the football pyramid and had to come back up again, a la Fiorentina or whatever, yeah, in Italy? When they got back to the Premier League, how would you feel about that, do you think?
You've still cheated.
They've done the crime, been caught and done the time.
I'd be elated with the fact that they got relegated all them times. Yeah. But then if they were carrying on with the same antics when they got back, I'd still be like, and also it would change my opinion towards them, because there'd be this like ill feeling, even more so than nobody is, of like, yeah, but they're the cheats. When you have to play them, yeah, you'd be like, yeah, but there they are, the cheats now, like confirmed guilty as charged cheats. So that'd be slightly worse, if anything.
Yeah.
My feeling, yeah. If they're continuing with the same backing and the same ownership.
But the thing is, they won't, obviously, if they've been done, then they won't be able to get away with things in the same way you'd imagine.
No.
They'll obviously have to invent new ones or do different things. And ultimately, if you're look at Wrexham, like, you know, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney have got the financial clout to make Wrexham the richest club in the National League,
working
in League Two, yeah, but they'll never be able to make them a Premier League team. They're not rich enough to be able to do that. So City won't need to bend all these rules to make Man City the richest club in all of the divisions on the way back up.
What did he want us to say? Like, what does he...
I don't know. What? Maybe some sympathy, if that was the case.
Yeah, but it was. I just thought it was an interesting because I've not really allowed myself to think about it as a concept. I actually think it would win a load of neutrals over, because people are idiots and they would see some sort of nobility in having to go back up and earn their way back to the top of the table somehow.
Are we missing something here?
I'm just
going to financially dope the way back to the Prem and do it again. Is anything actually changed? It's just that the rules don't exist in the lower down divisions, so Manchester City can make their 1 billion revenue a season in the fucking Conference North. That's just financially doping in another league.
Well, not even that, because you think they won't be. The idea is that they won't be able to do it to that level, but they won't need to at that level anyway. No. You know what I mean? They won't need to lie about their financial incomes because that's only done to balance the books.
Yeah, I'd like to see. I'd like to see it. Can I put that up? I'd like to know. I'd like to have to make that decision.
Movie, but I want to go and see the movie.
Can we try it? Just see what it looks like.
It's another Transformers film. I fucking know. I'm probably going to hate it, but you know, it's a big spectacle. Isn't
I want to watch it just in case. Yeah, okay,
are they still allowed like the Erling Haalands and that? And the
there's no way he stays. By the way, on that though, he got
to. No, but are they still allowed to pay people that much money? Is what I want to know.
Not even in those leagues. Not really. No, I don't think you can. There's all kinds of.
I think ultimately. There is financial fair play involved in all these. And look, again, they are such a big football club now, and they will actually have loads of eyes on them for going down doing that anyway. So that, you know, they don't sell the ground out anyway, do they? But they'll have the biggest ground in any division, you know, leading back up to the Championship and beyond. So even if
I don't know, Everton could have the biggest in the Championship.
I'd be so excited to watch it. Honestly,
the true story of the underdogs is coming to us in a couple of years' time.
Secret ingredients, crime. Oh, I'd be elated to watch them play Stanley Bridge Celtic away from home. It'd just be joyous.
But it'd be boring, wouldn't it? Like watching Man City win 35-0 every game.
Pep Guardiola doing all this. There's a fellow who's just worked a night shift and sent them in. Come on.
I tell you what, though, Guardiola would be the first to go.
Well, the thing is, the thing.
First to leave.
He's the one who says no
because he doesn't think it's going to happen. No. But he would fucking leave.
This is part two of it almost is. Would that change your opinion on Guardiola if he stuck it out and got them back up?
No.
What it would tell me is that he's a pussyhole, right? And that's because...
That is not a word, actually. We talked about this yesterday. Not pussyhole. We spoke about the use of the word. You couldn't say it.
I know.
Because you were... Yeah, and well, now here we are.
Oh, you couldn't say it on Mother's Day.
Right. Not on a Sunday.
He said all along...
It's day.
He said that, but he's also said Manchester City have told me they're not cheating and I believe them.
Mm. Yeah.
So if he goes down with them, he knew all along and he lied because they've been caught and they've lied to him. Yeah. So if you've been lied to and you wouldn't stay, you'd be like, you fucking told me you were telling the truth.
Yeah.
But he's so and you didn't cheat and I stayed and backed you in front of people. So if he and if he goes down, that means he lied and he knew.
I think he'd stay, mate. He's so like success hungry. The trophy's like all that matters, and obviously the finance would be ridiculous. They'd probably pay him even more money to stick around. I think he'd stick around. Which is mental.
Yeah. Well, listen, I found out this
his
morning.
Consultancy fee from the UAE's diplomatic department.
He'd be paid £250 a week, but his agent would be getting fucking billions.
They don't pay the directors.
I know, so I was just going to say that. Yeah. I saw it this morning, they don't pay the directors.
Kevin Maguire, them in Newcastle. Interestingly,
the amount of money he would make selling like on a little lemonade cart out front, charging £1 million a cup of lemonade to the owners as they walk in. Yeah. Oh, muchas gracias. Sounds.
I'm not sure what City fans expected there. I mean, you've cheated, you've tarnished your club, exactly what you stand for, and also the fact that like you've tarnished.
It would depend. For me, it would depend on how tied to the regulations and what are you allowed to do moving forward. Because if they're allowed to just, because they will, as I say, because of the size now of the football club, they would be far too big for the National League or the League or League Two or League One. They would have the budget without having to pump anything extra in, just on actual match day revenues and things like player sales and all that kind of stuff. They'd be able to build a war chest that would put them far and above anything they'd want to. And because it's less tight financial restrictions, I presume, because I don't see why Wrexham can do it and a couple of other clubs have done it.
Salford
do it comparatively for where they've been. But if the rules are tightened up and then when they come up, they then can't inflate their bits and pieces and they can't do these third-party transactions and stuff, then...
But they've already got a sporting advantage. The reason they're so big now is because their success is built on cheating.
Bought and paid for.
That's exactly.
A lot of the fans,
no matter how you make it back up, you've already got an unfair advantage over the clubs in whatever league that they get put down in, and that isn't fair.
Even if they sell all
their
players, the selling players that they got by
because of
the money that's going to bring in, because these are world
class style. Yeah, even with the size of the fan base now and their global appeal and their global reach, a lot of that is manufactured because of what they've been able to do in terms of their cheating, essentially. So, and I also wonder how much of that is fickle, in terms of the fans in particular, because you're right, a lot of that, well, loads of it is there in existence because they are competing at the top end of the Premier League and Champions League. Yeah. You watch what happens when they go to League Two. I know there's a core fan base. I'm fully aware of Manchester City.
All them want to bleat on about playing a fucking Stockport.
I get, and it exists, but a good old chunk of them aren't that, and a good old chunk of them will soon walk away to somewhere else when they go and get to talk.
And also, we're talking about 20,000 fans here, not what Man City have today, which is much
bigger. 100%, yeah. And they're the ones that would dissipate quite quickly.
They couldn't, for a start, they wouldn't be able to watch the games.
No.
Yeah. Also, on top of that, you know, look at the little light show that they've got going on for Champions League games and things like that. You're going to have a little light show for who? Who are you going to have? It's not as attractive anymore because you going in the Champions League, they'll win this Champions League this season, in my head, because Arsenal the only other team for me who can compete against them. But trying to make that spectacle and that, you know, make it a massive occasion when you're down in league, whatever, it's not as easy.
They would have more fans now, you know, if it happened to you.
Yeah, I agree.
Because
people
would stick it up because, look, you've chosen your football club and you're stuck with it, and there would be a bullishness. And that's the only thing on the Guardiola thing. If they continue to sell him on, now it's been a big stitch-up, there's nothing we can do about it, they've railroaded us and blah, 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 because you still see people. Where people go over and go, oh, well, I was over in Qatar, actually, and I spoke to loads of people. They all said it was boss.
David Beckham.
You were over there, were you? Cool. Were you taken over there by any chance? Oh yeah, that was, you know, and I was like, yeah, all right, mate. There's a chance he gets, you know, kind of like talked round into it, Guardiola, I guess. Yeah. But it'll be a fascinating watch.
15 charges. They can't just be they've got us here on one little. That's on one or two things where they've dug deep and they've just had us off. 115, however. No.
Brainwashing's brainwashing, though, isn't it? You know what I mean? And if you're convinced that if you can convince the world or your little world that the establishment's got it in for you, see with Toffee, you know what I mean? Like, oh, PSR's just pulling the rungs up on the lower clubs. I mean, if you just not spent your money so shitely, you wouldn't be in quite the situation that you're in. You know what I mean? You're in it now because you were financially managed into the ground. You had money to spend. You spent it terribly. You didn't then have anything to recoup to sell players on because the players you bought were all shite. That's why you are where you are. It's not as clear cut as they would have it believe, but they're totally bought into that. It's the Premier League corruption. It's all in for Everton. It's not. It's just an unfortunate set of circumstances on the edge of another set of unfortunate for Everton that have got them there. But it would be interesting to see whether Guardiola did stick around. I do think that would be like an interest, because it's an interesting challenge for him, just from a pure footballing perspective.
Yeah, because he's known for taking challenges.
But that's what I mean.
Fucking, but exactly.
Because he's never had. He's won everything. There's no other club that's going to offer him that challenge. You know, we said this a couple of weeks ago. You're going to do PSG. Why would you want to? Why? You know what I mean? You may as well stay at Man City,
Newcastle.
You know, if you can. Yeah. Well, again, why? What's the fucking point? But there's just something too. You get to keep your house, you get to keep your wage and all your thing, and you get to maybe put to bed this whole Guardiola can't do it without the best players, even though technically he'd have the best players in every league that he was in.
Stupid. I mean, fucking the conference with Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
Complaining, I told you I did it.
Yeah.
What a trophy.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what
Phil
Foden's thinks.
The only one to stay around, by the way.
Yeah.
Because he's got that fucking 47 tattooed on his ear, which I noticed.
Yeah. I'd like to know what he thinks, you know, if it does come down in the yard on for a great chunk of that 115. I'd just like to know what he thinks about his club at that point, like about the success. Like, is he just going to be the person to completely and utterly ignore it and pretend it's a conspiracy theory and it's not actually true and it's not actually his club's fault? Or is he actually going to be like, okay, you know, we might have actually...
Do you know what I think?
He'll separate it too.
Yeah, I think he will look at it and go, I could have done this with any players that I bought.
I agree.
Because I'm the best coach in the world.
That's what he'll be saying. Yeah.
It's good, but your question's interesting, because, and this kind of where this came from, which I thought it was conversation worthy, Steve came to me with that topic. Like, just literally out of the blue, we were just sat in a room together and he just went, what did you think about...
Were you getting your makeup done?
I'd had it done already. And it's one of those things where it speaks to a change of mentality, because I think they're starting to think, what will happen here, as opposed to being, now this is all nonsense, this is all bullshit and bluster and bravado. Even like, you know, because that's always been my thing of them. Like, you're an intelligent person. You're not just a louse who just goes, yeah, football, boo the goodies, you know, or bad, boo the baddies, who, you know, all that kind of stuff. You must think about these things. And it was the first notion I've ever had from a Man City fan that said, oh, we might be in a spot of bother here. Not that he's got insight, but it was
should they turn around and go, why the fucking football fans need to be psychologists?
Cheers to Paul and the gang for that one. Sticking with Paul, it is Journo Insight time. Usually my show, I was away this week, so Paul gladly filled in. And of course, the big news surrounding Liverpool is about the return of Michael Edwards. So Paul and regular wonderful journalist Neil Jones had a big old chat about Michael Edwards and what his return to Liverpool means for everybody.
There's been a lot of rumours around, like, sort of destabilisation behind the scenes at Liverpool. A lot of it to do with the rise in power of Klopp and headlines and what have you. Is there a little bit of this and almost giving Michael Edwards more power is almost, I think that's a bit of like an apology or admission that maybe they wish they could have kept him round the first time?
Possibly. I would say it's probably more Liverpool realising, wow, one man, Klopp, like, has the potential to, that could pull all of the sort of, all the Jenga pieces out, you know, and we sort of would rather not be in. Obviously, it'd be lovely to be in that position with the next manager because it would mean he's been really successful and really impactful. But do we probably need to think about sort of, you know, making sure that, if possible, the club's just sort of in a position where whoever the manager is sort of, not secondary because it's always going to be a massively important position, but isn't going to sort of leave us in a position where if they leave or if they fail, we have to start again and look at, you know, look at new sort of a completely new structure. So I don't know about the apology element to it, because I think Michael, I never got the impression that he stormed out of Liverpool and that was it, you know, I'm finished. It was all both. Obviously, he'd done his open letter, but he explained that, you know, 10 years at the club was seen as a long time, and maybe it does sometimes just need a bit of time away and a refresh and a, you know, maybe just a reminder that actually I quite enjoyed that and I liked being involved in an organisation like that. But I never got the impression that it was sort of like, I asked for this and you let me go. Yeah. So I clearly, he can't have been an acrimonious split, can he? Because he's back, you know, and he never went. He had opportunities to go to other clubs. You know, Chelsea, I think, was a big one that made a play for him. He was linked with Real Madrid at one point, wasn't he? I think Manchester United. So I think he could have come back into football, clearly, somewhere else. And the fact that he's done so at Liverpool suggests that relationship certainly wasn't too badly damaged when he left,
and the deal that he's being offered is obviously
You know, it's not insignificant, is it? It's bigger. Head of football sort of operations, maybe more than that. I mean, we'll see what the official title becomes.
Is there something here just in terms of the approach for why Liverpool have gone about this? Because you mentioned that Jürgen Klopp is just so involved and so pivotal to so much of Liverpool. He's such a figurehead at the football club that, and rightly so, because he's earned that every step of the way. He didn't walk in there, it wasn't handed to him. And ultimately, when you hand that to someone, it never goes well. Didn't happen, you know. David Moyes was basically handed all the keys that Alex Ferguson had got on his belt loop by the time he left, and it weighed very, very heavily on him. And you've seen that happen, you know, at other football clubs. Liverpool have made that mistake in the past. There's almost not a pathway on how to do it right, but Manchester United and Arsenal have demonstrated how to do it wrong. And so, you know. And you even circle back to Fenway in letting Kenny Dalglish go and not digging their heels in on Brendan Rodgers and letting him have almost the say over the director of football role too much there. That destabilised the football club. This is now them going, right, it's much easier to get this wrong than it is to get it right. So when actually by appointing Edwards, you've got a nice, you're steady in the ship, you've got someone who's actually brilliant at the job, and it means that it's harder to, you can get the manager wrong, but it's actually not going to be the end of the world if you get the manager wrong.
I think also an acceptance that it's once in a generation, this kind of manager, isn't it? And Klopp, I mean, that you can't expect to replicate that and just go, well, the new manager, you know, he puts his own stamp on it, but he's gonna have the same responsibilities as Klopp, albeit in his own way. I also think it takes some of the heat off the next manager, and, you know, in the sense of, if you had a novice sporting director and a novice in the job manager, you'd be getting a lot of sort of flack about, oh, they've bought the wrong players, they've done that. At least it's sort of like, well, hang on, you know, that structure's in place there, so we can focus on what the manager's actually doing, as opposed to, you know, was that his player? Did he want that medical department set up? Do you know why are people getting hamstring injuries? You know, there's actually a bit of sort of clarity around, well, hang on, that's what Liverpool have put in place above the manager. Let's see what the manager. I would be intrigued, actually, funny enough, to see whether Liverpool confirm the next manager as a head coach.
Yeah,
I don't think they've ever had one. I don't think Brendan was a head coach. He was a manager, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. I wonder whether that might see that, because I always noticed that Arsenal, Mikel Arteta's a head coach, I think. I don't know about Guardiola, but there's a few in the Premier League that are head coaches, and I've heard a few of them speak about that fact. You know, like, no, I'm a that's my job, is I'm a head coach. I wonder whether Liverpool might be a new thing that they have, where it's like, right, the football operations there. And there's your job there in terms of, you know, setting up the team and winning all our games.
It is. It's just a really interesting approach to that, because, yeah, you know, it means that it's a bit like you sell a world-class player. You don't go and buy another like-for-like replacement, you know, that sort of level. I mean, you know, people always think that you do, but more often than not as well.
It is very rare.
You go and get more people around to kind of pick up the slack, you know, and that's the thing, you know, you don't want, that's a lot of stress and strain for anyone to come in and kind of like, because there's all the stuff that Jürgen Klopp will be doing that no one will really be aware that he's doing. You won't know until he's gone. So actually you mitigate against that by getting more and better around to some extent. And you're right, as much as, and we'll come on to Richard Hughes next, you know, Fabrizio Romano reporting that he already has an agreement in place to join Liverpool for the end of the season.
I think that's pretty, I don't think he's quitting his job at Bournemouth on the off chance that the phone rings and Liverpool come. But he's been in his job for a long time, so he's had stability in his job, which I think is quite important. Liverpool have not just seen an impact, they've seen a sustained period. I know Bournemouth have had relegation, but generally Bournemouth have been a pretty good club, haven't they? You know, you look at, you know, probably punched above their weight at times, but played nice football. I think their recruitment's actually been quite good. You know, you look at, I know we joke about them paying a lot of money for Liverpool players, but they've brought some players that have gone on and had good sort of moves elsewhere. You know, think of Dan Juma was one that I think no one had heard of until Bournemouth got in. I suspect we might be talking about Utara at some point in the future as a player where you go, wow, where did he get him from? Tyrone Mings was one, obviously Phil Billing. You know, they've done well. They're a Premier League club, aren't they, and established. Yeah. And they've had some managers pass through, obviously, that have gone on. You know, Eddie Howe was there for many years, but he's now moved up the ladder. Mm-hmm. Gary O'Neill's done a really good job since he's left Wolves. I think Iola's pretty well thought of in what he's doing. So there's more success there than failure, isn't there? But over a period of time, it's not a case of he came in and just swept through the club in one transfer window and got rid of the manager and brought in 28 new players. You know, it's been a sort of, there's been planning, there's evidence of how they've planned and how they've made ruthless decisions. You know, O'Neill, a lot of people would have said, give him the job last. I think Scott Parker was sacked, 2 weeks into the season? I mean, Liverpool made it easy for him to do that, but they've made tough decisions as well. So there's a lot of evidence as to how he works, isn't there? And sort of how he, or what kind of processes they use. So I can't pretend to say, oh, well, that's the best appointment, because Richard Hughes was on this metric or whatever, but I think Liverpool have got a fair bit of evidence of what they're appointing, and sort of that he knows the Premier League, but also the game, if you like, the sport.
Well, let's talk the what's next almost for Liverpool, because as much as Richard Hughes isn't confirmed yet, Michael Edwards is effectively.
Yeah.
You know, the job is there. You know, there's talk, you know, obviously, you're talking about Hughes taking over in the summer. The work will need to be getting done before then, because, you know, Liverpool have got contracts to renegotiate. There's transfers, probably not quite as many transfers as we maybe would have thought last summer, given the rise of some of the players.
It's a very interesting one, transfer wise. You know, obviously, a little bit depends on the contracts that you mentioned. But I'd be interested to know if you give everyone a blank sort of canvas and said, right, you've got X amount of money, where's your first sort of 50 million getting thrown? I think you get some different answers.
Yeah.
I think some people would say, well, we need another midfielder. Some people would say centre-back. Maybe you'd say actually the forward area. Some would maybe say left-back. You look at Robertson turning 30. There's a few, but it doesn't feel like any of them are sort of like flashing light, sort of, got to get that fixed. You know, we might be speaking differently 2 weeks into next season, but at this moment it does feel like you can be a bit more selective in what you're doing recruitment wise, and it will be interesting to see what a new and old pair of eyes see about Liverpool's squad at the moment, especially with all the academy sort of prospects coming through. That, you know, it doesn't always work like this, but there is the prospect that Liverpool save themselves hundreds of millions of pounds with some of these players, with Conor Bradley, with Kwanzaa, with Bobby Clark, with Jadon Dans. But, you know, there's a lot of real potential there of players that, okay, it might take them a year or two to really sort of bed in and become Curtis Jones or Trent or whoever. But I think it does make it a very interesting summer.
Yeah, and this is the reality of where Liverpool are at though now. Now this is done or being done, even if it's not being confirmed in public, there's clearly been things moving behind the scenes that most of us haven't been privy to, which does give you hope and confidence that things like contracts, things like transfers, and then ultimately the choice on who's going to be the next manager, that these were the big roadblocks to do that, because actually Liverpool couldn't announce any of those things before these things were announced.
Yeah.
Even if it was all technically done, because you end up into worlds of tapping up and all that kind of stuff. Mm. This doesn't mean that Xabi Alonso's getting announced in the coming days, you'd imagine, but it does follow, because we've now got people who, well, they've got skin in the game, Neil, because they're actually going, their jobs are going to be dependent upon who takes the reins and how well they perform.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there are some dots that you can connect and say, well, they won't be going for him because he's in place or he's not in place. You know, I think at least with Michael Edwards, you can sort of say, well, you know, if you see a link to a player, you can say, well, yeah, probably is a Liverpool kind of player, because that's how they're going to be operating, isn't it? They're not going to be, you know, if you see Liverpool linked with Joshua Kimmich, for example, or you know, someone in the wrong side of 30, they're not going to do that, are they?
Hilariously linked with Manchester United, by the way, which is like, have they not learned any lessons over the last 15 years?
Just rinse and repeat.
But just on that though, because this is the thing as well, this is a competitive market.
Yeah.
This is like the striker transfer market 2 summers ago, where there's only so many really good ones floating around. Manchester United are in this process. Newcastle are therefore going to enter into a bit of this process as well if Ashworth moves there.
Chelsea
are doing the same. And Liverpool are already ahead of all of those football clubs, but it's very easy to not be.
Yeah.
And that's what, if this is boxed, it means that while the other clubs are still trying to box this, Liverpool get to move their attentions to what comes next.
Yeah, and they know there's big decisions as well, so it probably needed big people or a big person around there to gain a bit of the trust. You know, imagine Liverpool say in the summer, and I don't think it's beyond the realms, it's Salah to be sold. You know, we're not going to give him a new contract, or we're going to cash in. Could happen. I think it's a lot easier for fans to sort of get behind that if it's Michael Edwards than if it's Tim Stuyten or another coming in as sporting director. Even if it isn't necessarily solely their call, you know, I don't for one second believe it won't be Richard Hughes' decision whether Liverpool keep Salah or not.
Yeah.
But I think it's a lot easier for them people to get behind that, or if they start looking and people say, why, you know, why are we not spending loads of money on this? I think it, again, it's more easy to understand when it's familiar people around there. But I wrote last pre-season, it's a fascinating pre-season. I think I said it's the most fascinating pre-season for years, and that was even before the Saudi Arabia wave arrived at Anfield.
Before Caicedo and Saudi Arabia tried to get
I just meant in a general, you know, there was a lot of questions to be answered. I think you can add a little bit of extra onto that this season, you know, this pre-season, sorry. There's Liverpool in far better shape squad-wise and mood-wise, but they've got a manager going, his staff going, they've got new appointments to be made. And I think what they sort of do strategically with the squad, I think it's going to be fascinating, because I don't know what I would do. I have sort of half opinions on, I still think they probably do need another centre-back. I do think maybe longer term, the full-back areas might be areas that they might need to sort of make some significant signings. I possibly think they're the forward short, generally, but they're not like ones that I go, well, that's definitely, you know, I'm going to say that's definitely the answer. I think it'll be interesting to see what this, like I say, what a fresh pair of eyes thinks.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
And finally, this week, it is the final word show. Quite ironic, quite fitting, if nothing else. Yes, Liverpool beat Sparta Prague. They battered them 6-1, didn't they? So yeah, 11-2 on aggregate. And discuss it all, you've got Dan Clubb, you've got Peter Kenny-Jones, and you've got Jay Pearson.
Liverpool were rampant, quite frankly. Before we get on to the actual game itself and how that transpired, team news-wise, because we had a little chat off-air and there was a little bit of surprise, I think it's fair to say, in how strong Jurgen Klopp went. There shouldn't have been that element of surprise at all when you consider Klopp basically queued it up in his press conference by saying, no, we're going to be pretty strong for this. For you, Peter, I'll stick with you on it. Was it stronger than you expected? I guess when you factor in the need for momentum, the need for minutes in some cases, and the need for rhythm, and I guess in certain areas a little bit of need for added sharpness, it shouldn't have come as a great shock.
Yeah, well, I did think we would go strong, so I can't say I was massively shocked. I understand why people would have been, but I think, as you say, Salah, Szoboszlai needed the minutes. And like people are saying, play Adrian over Kelleher, but that just didn't seem right. He deserves the minutes as much as he needs them as well to keep fit and keep focused. And yeah, we've got a game on the Thursday, game on the Sunday. We've done that all season, and you know it's only United on Sunday, isn't it? So there's no reason to rest for them.
No comment.
But yeah, you know what I mean. We just got it. May as well go strong, and then it's an international break, and we need momentum. So I wasn't really surprised, to be honest.
Same, Jay.
Yeah, absolutely. And what Pete just said there about momentum, we were talking about it before we went in the ground yesterday. And you just think about these types of games where they're coming thick and fast every couple of days. Sometimes it doesn't work when you've got a week off. And we, you know, having a week off when you've only got a small squad, then it's okay. But we've got such a big squad, we need to be using every player that we can for these four competitions. So, yeah, I was really happy with the lineup, to be honest, because I just thought, well, again, get the tie over early. I'd rather, always with the second leg with these issues, and you think to yourself, right, well, play your strongest side and then sub off rather than play a week inside and then bring the big guns on if you need them. So yeah, mate, I was happy with the way it was and we got the job done pretty quickly, didn't we?
Yeah, we certainly did. Yeah, within 14 minutes, an absolute blitz, really. It became a non-event thereafter. Liverpool put, if there were any even slight concerns that Sparta could make a bit of a fist of this and make a game of it, they were well and truly put to bed very, very quickly. Before we get on to the goals and sort of, I think there was little elements of sort of importance within all of them and a little backstory, so I want to touch on them in a moment. I'll stick with you though, Jay. Obviously, you got your Sparta top on there. Like, realistically, in anybody's heart of hearts, I don't think anybody expected Sparta to come and sort of even attempt to overhaul a four-goal deficit. Having said that, from a Liverpool perspective, as statements go, what we did in those opening 40 minutes was pretty emphatic.
Yeah, it's what Klopp is sort of known for, blowing teams away quite quickly over the years, isn't he? So, again, we respected Sparta by playing that type of side, and you know, I know the manager said that, didn't he, after the game, the respect that we showed them. And you know, I think at the end of the day, the fans knew what they were going to be letting themselves in for, especially from the first leg. They were coming for a day out. You know, it's once in a lifetime really to play at Anfield, because Liverpool are an elite level team at the minute and they're not going to be playing this competition hopefully for forever. You know what I mean, because we're playing Champions League football. So yeah, mate, the first 15 minutes you just go wow, blown away. It's like, you know, sometimes you're up and down all the time, but oh my god, we were up and down, weren't we, every time. Oh, there's another goal, right, there you go, it was great, really good to see.
At least you got to see it, the actual coverage on TNT. I think it was between the first and second goal, literally just seeing Bobby Clark putting the ball in the back of the net.
Oh, didn't, my God, I've not seen that.
Oh, didn't see a single other thing. Today, yeah. Live, anyway. Like, the replay obviously showed it. But honest to God, there was still, like, you know that graphic that comes in and goes, like the Europa League one with the
orange? Oh, yeah.
That was very much a thing by the time Bobby Clark was literally putting the ball in the back of the net. It was, honestly. And it was, again, you look up and you go, oh, hang on, it's 2-0. Yeah, on the goals, Pete, I'll come to you first and foremost. Like, Darwin Núñez obviously opened scoring. Really well worked goal, actually. Nicely executed. Lovely ball from Szoboszlai. Not only does he see him, but he picks him out brilliantly as well. But talk about the goal and sort of the quality within it. But also, I think the fact that Núñez scores is our first little story here, because a little bit of a surprise starter for me, if truth be told. I think if he was going to be not as strong, I think he might have been one that might have missed out, potentially. Probably him and maybe Endo. But he starts the game and, again, it comes back to the importance and momentum and rhythm and all that sort of stuff, because it feels like he's on a hot streak at the moment, Darwin Núñez. And how often have we said with somebody like him, a striker of his ilk, strike whilst the iron's hot? And it feels like we're doing that.
Yeah, he's had 9 goals, last 9 starts. I think the start was one, which is amazing for the player who everyone says is lacking confidence and doesn't score enough goals. You know, he's answering all the critics, and he's had the most goal involvement already this season that he's had in anyone in his career. So, you know, he's just gone from strength to strength. And yeah, maybe we would have rested them. Obviously, if we've got Jota to add into that, you could probably got another player to be able to rotate. Maybe Dan's, if he wasn't coming back from that concussion, could have had a slight chance. But, you know, Klopp went strong, didn't he? He wanted to try and win the game, and that's what we did. And, you know, it couldn't have started better than Núñez putting the ball in the bottom corner.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good finish as well, I think it's fair to say. You then, Jay, next. Bobby Clark. Now, again, another little nice positive story in amongst this goal for me. I think, listen, Joel Quanso and Conor Bradley have got a lot of plaudits, and rightfully so, for what they've been able to do since coming into the side. But Bobby Clark has quietly gone about his business. I think he's been really impressive during that burn period as well. But this felt like a moment for him, and probably one he deserved as well.
Yeah, he put on Instagram, didn't he, after the game, like what a great moment it was for him to score his first goal, and especially at Anfield. So again, you hit the nail on the head. They're just, he's gone about his business quietly. But McConnell's been like that as well. And I don't know what magic is being worked in this academy, mate, but it's brilliant to see. And you know, these players could save us millions in the future, but just made up for him. Because what I really liked about him yesterday, I know we'll speak about the goal after, you know, he's getting in the way, you know, he's shoving people out of the way to win the ball back and stuff like that. And there was another chance that he had where he nutmegged the player, and then it was a good save from their keeper and stuff. So he's playing really well. And again, it's one of them plays where you go, oh, Bobby's playing sound.
Yeah,
you know, you're not worried about Bobby Clark starting. So it's good, and it's nice to be shouting for Bobby again.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah, I've seen loads of people saying that on Twitter. Yeah, I can't mix the two.
Personally. No, absolutely not.
Mo Salah next then. Pete, like, obviously 20 goals once again for the seventh consecutive season. Just remarkable, like, just the levels. And also, Salah generally last night obviously takes his goal really well, but he looked a lot sharper. Fought against Man City, he looked a little bit rusty, a little bit off it. And last night, that was the opposite. He was lethal, basically.
Yeah, well, so we've treated them with respect, and so did Salah, and it wasn't a hint of a 30-odd-year-old striker who plays every minute of every game for us, and he's playing against a lower opposition. He wanted to score, he wanted to assist, he wanted to run up and down. And you know what a role model that is for the players like Bobby Clark and Bradley, who's behind him. You know, it doesn't matter how much he'll achieve, he still wants to get every minute, every goal, every pass he can do. He tries to get everything out of it. You know, you see that Cruyff turn he does through someone's legs, and you know, he was having fun out there, wasn't he? And that's what you want to see. You know, there's a lot of high pressure games coming up. That's probably one of the least pressure we're going to have for the rest of the season, and he still played with the same intensity. And yeah, and he was rewarded with his goal as well.
Yeah, go on.
Sorry, do you know what it reminded me of? The second and third goal, how, I know you missed it on the telly, but it was like we were hounding them.
Yeah.
And if you remember back to when we played City at Anfield, 17-18, and we were like 4-1 up or something like that, you know what I mean?
4-3 game.
4-3 game, yeah. But we obviously, we blitzed City, haven't we? But we were hounding them. Every time they got the ball, we were straight at them from kickoffs, and we scored quite a few goals in quick succession. It reminded me of that. And again, you know, you say, yeah, you show Sparta respect and stuff like that, but we're Liverpool Football Club. We shouldn't respect anybody that comes to Anfield to play football. You respect them before the game, respect them after sound. Mm. But during that 90 minutes, I don't care. We'll go for blood. And that's exactly what we smell. And I'll just, like I said it just before, I love the way for Salah's goal, Bobby Clark just shoved that defender out the way and said, I'm having that. And Salah's like, thank you.
No, you're right. And there was that intensity. There was that, we were all over him like a rash room, like you say. And that pressing was remarkable at times. Don't get me wrong, Sparta helped by not being particularly brilliant at playing out from the back. I think it's fair. And Southampton was similar recently when they came to Anfield as well. But they obviously have their principles and they have their way of playing. They're going to stick to the guns. And, you know, in one hand, you can credit them for that. Then the other, you go, that's a little bit naive when you come to Anfield. Liverpool are, like we were last night, absolutely on it. I think Bobby Clark was instrumental in that as well. You're absolutely right to mention him. I'll stick with you on the Salah sort of story moreover for a second, Jay, if I can, because again, 20 plus goals once again, like, not bad for one season wonder. The guy's just remarkable.
He is, mate, and we're very blessed to have him, and he'll go down as arguably the most consistent striker we've ever had. I think it's probably, you know, I mean, they look,
well, nobody's ever done it before.
No, exactly, so, but you know, you think to yourself, how many years can you do it? And people said for years, didn't we, we didn't have a, you know, 20 goal a season striker until Torres arrived after Robbie Fowler, you know what I mean? So it's one of them things where you go, right, now with, I think a lot of people have taken it for granted. It's like, oh yeah, they'll just score again, he'll just keep scoring, and we are going to miss him. Really are. But what a phenomenon he's been since 2017. We're so lucky that we've had the privilege to be around when Mo Salah's played for Liverpool Football Club.
Yeah, talking like he's on his way there. That's a conversation I'm not willing to have right now.
Just trying to get in the mindset, Dan.
Trying to come to terms with it ever so slowly.
Thanks to Dan, thanks to Peter, thanks to Jay, everyone else involved in the shows, and most importantly, thanks to you guys for listening to this episode of the Weekly Podcast. Like I say, if you want all those shows plus loads more, we've had reactions to the Europa League draw, we had the final word after Manchester City, we've got expert insights with Dan Club talking to people who know loads about Richard Hughes, about Fichte. Honestly, absolutely everything. RedmenPlus.com. That is the place to go for it all. But for now, thanks very much for listening. We'll be back with another episode of Weekly next Friday. See you later.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.